Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Tardon and Liza Journeau of Wild Apple Magazine, which, let's preface at the beginning, is not actually a magazine.
No, it's an online journal.
It might have been a magazine and still might. We'll talk about that later. But the ambition behind this project is very near and dear to your hearts, because between the two of you, there's over a decade of living gluten-free.
It's true.
Way before the curve. You guys are, like, in front of the fad.
Yeah, I'm the OG.
Yeah. OGGF. That's amazing.
Oh.
But when did that happen? I mean, I'm assuming both of you grew up consuming plenty of gluten, processed white breads, etc., like the majority of us.
In an Italian-American household, no less. Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. I discovered that I had celiac disease in 2003, so it's been a little while.
Yeah, and when you detected that, I mean, what was that initial feeling? How did you know that you might have something wrong?
I actually shared an office at Martha Stewart Living with a woman who, while I was sharing an office with her, found out that she had a wheat intolerance, and so shortly thereafter, I was having some similar symptoms to her, and I thought, maybe I have this also, and I started doing some research online and realized that I had a lot of, like, things on the checklist for celiac disease. So I went to the doctor, and they told me a bunch of different things they thought I had, not including celiac disease. And so then I went to a different doctor and just asked for a blood test, and that came back positive for the antibodies for celiac. So then after that, you get to have an upper GI endoscopy to confirm if there's been...
You're saying that with such a smile.
Oh, yeah.
It was a long time ago.
You get some drugs that are pretty serious, so it's fun. But they basically confirm that there's been damage to the lining of your intestine.
Yeah. And let's say again, celiac disease is a real thing. It's an autoimmune disease. Because a lot of the time there's that rift between people that say they're celiac versus gluten intolerant or wheat intolerant. This magazine is for both.
This magazine is for people who love food but just don't want to eat gluten. So it's for people who really love to cook and love to go to the farmer's market, who want to spend their weekend foraging for something, or just getting a really great recipe and making it and having friends over and like that.
Because, Liza, when did that change in your life? I know there was a point where you decided to eliminate gluten from your so-called diet.
Yeah, I was having health problems, and I had somebody say to me, you know, give up gluten, and I thought, no way. And then I was just in a lot of pain, so I tried it, and it worked.
Yeah. I know in your little bio you say that you miss pretzels and croissants.
Of course. Like, you can't make... As it stands today, I have not seen a high-quality, gluten-free croissant.
Yeah. Maybe it shouldn't exist.
Perhaps. It seems, yeah. And I miss that stuff, but really very rarely.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, we have it down. And we just eat wonderful food all the time, and nobody notices that there's no gluten.
It's only when you come to do a radio show in Roberta's that you get sad that you can't eat pizza for just a moment.
Yeah, for a moment. Yeah.
It is.
But I'm sure you guys have had gluten-free pizzas that have saved it in a way. But again, you know, it's not the same food that you're looking for if you're trying to be gluten-free. But I want to backtrack to when you two met, because Martha Stewart Living was mentioned, and you shared an office. Tara, you as a photographer or photo editor, and Liza, you as a food stylist.
Yeah, I think that we were in the same office, but it wasn't until later that we started working together, until both of us had left Martha Stewart individually.
Yeah.
I think I probably...
So I was a photo editor at Real Simple, and I was hiring Liza a lot to do food shoots for us there, and so we had sort of met on set that way.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what food was like maybe 5 years ago in magazines. I feel like there was much less restriction of, you know, certain allergens, certain diets, and, you know, it was more about entertaining. Because when I first approached, you know, your magazine, Wild Apple, I had no idea it was gluten-free.
Yes.
I'm assuming that's something you really are happy to
accomplish. That's wonderful. What we hate is the punishment diet, where it's like, I can't have this and I can't have that. And the whole, like, your life is based on a complaint rather than an enjoyable experience of everything that's bountiful and natural and tastes good. Because a lot of people eat things that are already gluten-free. They just don't know it. Like, if you have dinner and it's chicken and potatoes and some kale, you did it. It's gluten-free, most likely. You know? So there's a lot that's already going on in people's lives that just doesn't have gluten in it. And I think we're just trying to celebrate what's out there and sort of the freedom that you can have regardless.
One of the impetus to make the magazine in print form originally was just that we both wanted something that was beautiful and current, that we didn't have to flip through and flag pages after we've read an ingredient list to see that it was gluten-free. So we thought, like, let's compile some great recipes in one place and share this resource with people, which is essentially what we're going to be doing in the online version.
Yeah. So let's talk about that index, that indices of what is gluten-free, because we just said chicken and potatoes.
Yeah.
I mean, potatoes, proteins, eggs.
Yeah.
Rice, corn, so polenta.
Millet.
Amaranth,
quinoa,
buckwheat.
You guys have this rehearsed.
We don't have it rehearsed. I'm just remembering things and she's remembering things. So,
and obviously, you know, fruits and vegetables and animal proteins, dairy. There's so much to choose from. There's way more to choose from than things that you have to eliminate, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
It's funny, in my mind, too, initially, I clumped together gluten-free and vegan sometimes for some reason. But I think when you hear a term like gluten-free, like you said before, it's sometimes an elimination diet rather than I have all these other things.
Yeah, and there's something about the sound of the word gluten that's like, you know, it doesn't roll off the tongue and it sounds technical. Yeah. So it also sort of automatically sounds like a weird, like, diet and nutritionist put you on, or a nurse or something, sort of put you on a diet. But in fact, it's sort of, well, we've changed it around and we've made it kind of wonderful.
This is the whole sort of excitement for us, is that we want to show people this other side of it. So it's sort of like the new way of looking at it. And not that no one has done this before, but it's not as common. Like, the more mainstream way of looking at this diet is about taking things away from your life. So we just want to reframe that a bit.
Yeah, and let's refute the idea of it being a diet too and call it a lifestyle, which I know you've mentioned many times in, you know, your press releases, etc. And it is, it's a choice rather than a constriction. And so let's start, like, loosening that waistband, because I've also heard, I mean, this is a whole nother subject, that, you know, being gluten-free doesn't mean losing weight.
No.
I think a lot of people initially think that, oh, gluten-free, that's great for me to, you know, get in shape, lose weight. I mean, get in shape's correct, but it's not in a diet in that sense.
It's especially not going to help you if you're buying a lot of processed gluten-free foods and replacing things
that's
in your diet.
That's so true. You know what I've heard from a lot of people who initially are going gluten-free? They're like, it's so expensive. And it doesn't have to be expensive. It's expensive because they're buying sort of packaged, pre-made things that have a giant gluten-free label on them. And we're not opposed to those things, but for your weekly groceries, instead of buying pasta, maybe you would buy rice and make rice that wasn't sort of like packaged in a prepackaged, you know, individual plastic pouch. You would cook it from scratch. And that's going to you know, really do great things for your wallet and your palate.
I mean, let's talk more about those ingredients, because when you're buying processed food too, some have gluten in them that you wouldn't expect, like salad dressings. I was reading the Yahoo Food piece that you guys did with the lovely Julia Bainbridge, and that one kind of blew my mind more than anything else.
In salad dressings, a lot of the time, you'll find hydrolyzed wheat protein.
And wheat has gluten, so.
Yeah.
And also soy sauce.
Yeah.
Soy sauce will be fermented from wheat often, unless you get a tamari, which is fermented from soy. So you just read labels religiously. That's something that we really drive home with people. And something that I feel like I have to remind myself, because I'll just be like, oh, I'm pretty sure that potato chip is gluten-free. And, you know, really, if you're dealing with a potato chip that's like a salt and vinegar or a barbecue flavor, there will be some gluten in there often. So you really do have to religiously read labels. And that's a little annoying, but you get used to it. And then you really save yourself incidents.
French fries, ice cream.
French fries are the worst. They make me crazy, because you assume it's a potato. Like, how bad could it be? And you're excited because that is something that you could sort of find everywhere that you think would be gluten-free. And I have noticed that people in nice restaurants lately have been flouring their potatoes. Like, they're battering. Yeah.
Not to mention the part where if you have celiac disease, you know, if it's fried in a fryer with other things that contain gluten, they can be
like cross-contaminated,
and that really will have an adverse effect.
Yeah, I think it was in another one of the Yahoo food pieces that you guys did about sharing toasters, like even particulates of someone's, you know, glutinous bread versus your gluten-free. And
yeah, if you get crumbs of bread that has gluten, like just wheat bread, regular bread. If you have it on a cutting board and you cut it, and then you cut a gluten-free loaf on top of it, and then you get the crumbs stuck to it, and then you have wheat, you there you are.
So it's just like kosher almost? You got like two sinks, two dishwashers?
I got to tell you, it's almost like kosher, but you can just be a little bit more careful.
Yeah.
You don't have to go buy a new dishwasher or anything.
Yeah. I was reading somewhere that millions, I believe even like over 2 million people in the country, if not more, have celiac disease, and even that much more have problems with gluten. And the majority of those don't even know they have it. So what are those first signs? What are those instances where, is it a rash?
A little something I like to call gastrointestinal distress.
Yeah.
On the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the time, you know, you'll have different, like some people have stomach pain, some people have other stomach things, rashes, nausea, vomiting, you know, all that fun stuff. But also other things like depression. And because if you have celiac, it affects your immune system. For me, like, my immune system was very down. I was tired all the time. I was getting colds a lot, amongst other things. But the symptoms are really different for different people, and some people are asymptomatic. One of the big things for me as well was pretty extreme weight loss. So it just comes from your body not really being able to absorb any of the nutrients because the lining of the intestine has been damaged. I also had a loss of bone density, which was like early osteoporosis called osteopenia.
I have to tell you that if I had an extreme weight loss situation, I don't know that I would be like, there's a problem. I'd be like, don't I look fabulous? Like, as I age, it's just getting better.
Yeah.
A totally not healthy attitude. But, you know, I don't know that I would have run to the doctor.
I think there's something like over 300 different symptoms that you might have in any sort of combination.
Yeah.
So it's like a little murky to know. But, you know,
they overlap a lot with other things like IBS and Crohn's and colitis and stuff.
Yeah. But it's, if you have an autoimmune disease, often you'll give up gluten. And, you know, people do tend to think of it as a health thing. And if you did stop eating gluten, like, basically, it could be conceivable that you were giving up carbs, and that apparently helps you lose weight, we've heard. We're not so interested in health and, like, weight loss.
Yeah.
We're really interested in eating.
And if you're not hungry by now, especially after hearing about gastrointestinal and IBS and all that, we're going to come right back and talk about all the wonderful recipes in Wild Apple. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hey, and welcome back to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here again with Tara Don and Liza Journeau of Wild Apple Magazine / Recipe Journal, premiering online soon.
Yeah, it should be out the end of this month.
Very, very, very excited. And when it does come out, I kind of want to put a challenge out there to a lot of people who don't live gluten-free to at least just try it for a month. Because, like we said, it's not just for celiacs. It's not someone, you know, it's not just for someone who has intolerance, but you feel different afterwards, and for the most part, better. I know I've gone through this. I personally have an autoimmune disease and had to do that elimination diet, and probably felt best when I was without gluten, but then I also have my vices like beer.
Beer is gluten-y.
Beer is gluten-y. Why does it have to be? And all the gluten-free beer that I've tried out there, and if there are any brewers that want to, you know, try me on this, I just not found like those sorghum ales, and they just don't do it for me.
I have one you can try.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Which one is it?
New Planet.
New Planet? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll give it a shot. But
there's six different types, so there's different flavor profiles for each.
Okay. Might mix and blend my own. But first, another shout out to Whole Foods Market for sponsoring the show. But let's kind of take this to the supermarket and let's go shopping for some of the recipes that you guys are going to be premiering, starting with breakfast.
Okay.
What would you pick up at the supermarket, fill your pantry with, and what would you be making?
We love corn tortillas. I think it's important, once again, just to read the ingredients, make sure that it's not like a corn and wheat tortilla, but an all-corn tortilla. And we pretty much can live off of those, especially in the summertime. We love to make an avocado toast, where we take a tortilla and we put it on the gas stove, and we sort of grill each side, and then we put a mashed avocado on there, squeeze a little bit of lemon juice and a little bit of olive oil, sprinkle some crunchy salt on there, and it's amazing. That's like a great, quick...
Done and done. I almost feel like whenever I meet someone who has, you know, some kind of gluten restrictions, I always suggest Mexican cuisine anyway. Like, let's go out for Mexican. Is that kind of a fail-safe?
Not always. I definitely got glutened in the East Village at a Mexican restaurant this summer. I think that, yeah, Mexican tends to be good, but I think you always want to tell your server that you don't eat gluten, because people will put flour on fish before they throw it in the pan, you know, which is totally reasonable, but they can do it without it.
Yeah. Reasonable from a cooking standpoint.
From a cooking standpoint, it's reasonable, but if you just tell people, they generally are sympathetic and will help you out, and a chef, you know, won't be offended that you have an allergy often, or if an eating restriction.
I think with Mexican also, that you want to be sure it's corn tortilla and you're not getting wheat tortilla. The chips maybe are fried if they're fried in house with
other things.
But I think you can sort of tell when people get it when you're having the conversation with your server, and if they're not getting it, you can tell. You can ask things like, well, are you sure the fish isn't dredged in flour before it's fried? Are you sure there's no flour to thicken that sauce? Those kinds of questions, leading questions that will help you get the answers that you need.
Yeah. Oats and oatmeal is not one that I would have expected to ask about gluten, because I've always thought that they were gluten-free. But you make a birdseed granola. Tell me about what's in that and what to watch out for with oats.
What to watch out for with oats is that there's cross-contamination on the processing of oats. So there are like certified gluten-free oats made by a couple of different companies, including Bob's Red Mill. It's really an accessible brand. In the birdseed granola.
But, oh, sorry, cross-contamination. Just explain what that is.
Cross-contamination is just, you know, naturally gluten-free things that have been touched by gluten. So in the facility where things are processed, perhaps, or, you know, in the restaurant kitchen, like Liza was talking about before, with same cutting boards, tools, knives, things like that being used, and sort of transferring the bits of gluten to the gluten-free food.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you. No, I was going to add that. You beat me to it.
Sorry.
Liza's stealing your show.
Sorry. Didn't mean to steal your show.
No, feel free. But, I mean, that is the whole processing plant, because we see that in peanuts, and that's, you know, a huge thing that even airlines aren't allowing it on. But there's plenty of gluten on those airlines. Is it respiratory, too? I mean, can it be? No?
No. No. I mean, I don't know that people can have an anaphylactic reaction, although I might be wrong because I'm not a doctor.
But yeah.
That's not something I've seen in my reading and experience.
Well, let's get back to that granola and all the seeds that are in there.
Truly, I don't have the recipe in front of me, and I forget everything that we put in
there's
it.
There's millet.
There was millet.
There's buckwheat, gluten-free oats, and then spices.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Cardamom.
Cardamom. Was it like cardamom and cinnamon? There's a little bit of sea salt and honey. Yeah?
Yep.
And then we just mix that together. And I think we called it the birdseed granola because it had a lot of millet in it.
It looks like birdseed.
And birdseed has a lot of millet in it.
So there's no lack of texture and flavor and spice. And, you know, it's all in there.
Yeah.
And again, I want to kind of like re-stress that this isn't a limiting thing. You know, what Wild Apple is trying to show is that there's so much more to this genre of food, of cooking these days.
Yeah, yeah. That granola is really good, really crunchy, a little bit sweet.
Some of the things that we'll launch with as far as recipes go include, you know, like a grilled chicken paillard with a mustard plum sauce.
We have the fall fruit cobbler that's coming out. Super excited about that.
There's a really delicious cilantro salad dressing, a many bean and chervil salad.
Oh, yeah. And then the polenta recipe. That's a really nice one, too.
Yeah. I actually had that question about beans. I was assuming legumes are gluten-free. And
yes.
Whenever you see, like, vegetarian burgers, it's always, like, beans as binders and this and that. Which leads me to a second question is, one, am I right saying that beans are gluten-free? And
yes.
Two, why are they so often used as a binder, as a gum? Is that something that doesn't naturally exist out in the gluten-free realm?
That's a great question. Because gluten is a protein, and what it does is bind things together and create structure as well in baked goods. So when you're looking at a burger that needs, if it's a vegan burger and it, you need sort of protein in there, and then you also need to stick all the little vegetable bits together. You can really make a paste out of beans, and then that will hold the whole thing together for sure, but not in the same way that gluten does. When we're doing gluten-free baking, we really don't like to use the gums. And when I say the gums, anybody who's done gluten-free baking knows it's guar gum and xanthan gum. We use a mixture of psyllium husk, chia, and flax to sort of imitate that same technique. And it gives us great results. It really does. Well, we still get to use whole foods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all those elements, again, like texture and structure, are available to you, just not the mainstream ones. And talk about not mainstream. I had no idea what psyllium is.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about psyllium.
I wish I could tell you lot about psyllium.
I don't even know how it's spelled.
It's Psyllium.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, that's correct. I don't know. But that there are the ability to use these things as gums, as binders, and, you know, gluten-free baking can exist in great ways. And
yeah, you can get wonderful textures,
I think,
for sure.
Part of that is either using a gluten-free sort of AP flour mix that has a mix of flours in it, or creating your own so that there's different flours that sort of do different things and work together to play sort of like wheat flour.
Yeah. So in your pantry, do you have store-bought and your own mixes of gluten-free flours?
Yes.
Yes. So tell me what store brands that you enjoy.
I'm going off script here. I'm going to say that mine has gum in it, the one that's in my fridge right now. Cup for cup.
Cup for cup.
Yeah.
And I think that was a Thomas Keller pastry or chef or cook that developed that recipe.
Yes. And I have made very thin handmade tagliatelle with this flour. So this flour. This is my own thing. This flour
you can't
really
take the Italian out of the tart.
You can't. No, I had to see if I could do it. This flour, it does great things. You can kind of push it pretty far, I think.
I like, and our recipes often use either the King Arthur flour blend, which is a rice-based mix with no gums, or the Trader Joe's blend, which is also a rice-based mix without gums. I make my own mix at home, and I do tend to use the America's Test Kitchen blend that they came up with, and they came up with it to imitate King Arthur flour. So I tend to make my own.
It's a more economical
solution. It is more economical.
Solution.
Yeah, and even though you're making a big batch, it's like having a 5-10 pound bag of AP, in your pantry.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because you can use it for ages.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, and for everything.
Keep on telling me about baking then. I know pancakes, I know waffles, I know cookies. They're all in there.
Yeah, we've definitely come up with a whole bunch of cookies. And this fall we'll be coming out with some Christmas cookies, which we're super excited about. And our goal is always to make something that is delicious and wonderful, that when you taste it, your first thoughts are that it is delicious and wonderful, not that somebody's restricted you in some way.
Yeah.
Not, oh, that's good for gluten-free.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, second we don't want best. A handicap. No. Yeah. No.
So who chooses what? I mean, I'm assuming this is a pretty collaborative project between two of you.
Oh, yeah.
And you come from such creative backgrounds, but now you're publishers as well. So what new hats have the two of you had to wear, and how have you... Not that you're wearing a ton of hats right now, but physically not wearing like a stack of hats on your head. But what things have you two had to work together that you've never had to collaborate on before?
Oh, writing and editing.
that simple stuff.
Yeah, I mean we're it's old hat for us to collaborate on photographs, of course. That we have a major flow going in that department. But I'm sort of going back to my very first freelance job at Martha, and then. At Moro Cookbooks after that, doing copy editing and, reading the recipe and making sure it makes sense. And I think there's also the whole thing. When we were running a Kickstarter campaign to try to launch a print magazine, there was this whole thing around the publishing and the ad sales and how does this pay for itself? That stuff is not necessarily where our interests lie. So I think we're very excited to sort of get back to focusing on like Saturday night, 10 p.m. conversations about what things we want to cook and what goes with what.
Yeah. Can we talk about Kickstarter really quickly? Which may be a little bit of a sore subject for you.
It's not.
It's far enough in the past.
Yeah.
And we're pursuing sort of a version of that idea anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, fail, it's over. It's sort of like, now, well, that was interesting, and it helped us get the word out for sure.
Yeah.
We think the Kickstarter platform is really wonderful for that. And it was like an experiment we tried and something we really went for, and we didn't make our financial goal. And the model for doing the magazine was based on a certain budget. And because we didn't make the budget, we said, okay, well, what are we going to do now?
I was looking at that Kickstarter page, and one, you must have been proud as to actually how much you raised, if there wasn't an end goal in sight,
because
that was quite an accomplishment. But it's the number of backers. It's like the number of people that commented that blew me away, because there were so many people so excited. Not to say that they didn't, give you all goodwill and whatever they, support that they could, but that there's a need for this space.
That was the reason why we wanted to do it in the first place. Again, like I was talking about not wanting to have to flag pages in other magazines, but we just felt like it's time for there to be something beautiful around this subject matter that's current, that's on trend in the food as well as the images and design.
Yeah, we really are super excited to bring what we're bringing this fall to the online space. And I think we both have romantic ideas about books and holding them in your hand and magazines and how you might use them as a resource constantly in your kitchen, and they become like an heirloom. And we love sort of the old beat up magazine on your kitchen counter that you're still cooking from, but for now maybe it's like your old beat up iPad.
No, I mean, I foresee a lot of good things happening out of what you two are doing in the online space, hopefully, inevitably, in the more tactile print space. But however you go about doing it, you know, we're happy you're there. And everyone should jump onto you. WildAppleMagazine.com. Follow you on Twitter. Engage you, because this is a community thing. This isn't just two creatives putting out something that everyone should follow. But, you know, it's a collaborative, larger effort of everyone that is seeking a gluten-free lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure.
We're very excited to share.
Excellent. Yeah. Coming soon. WildAppleMagazine.com. Thank you again, Tara and Liza.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.